This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street. Do you need a conference room for your next meeting? Learn more by visiting 100bogart.com.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Today is June 25th, 2019. This is Beer Sessions Radio on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is a special show, and we cover all things of beer, beer sales, cider, food, and ag, and hops. But what I love is just seeing the trajectory of the careers and the businesses of the guests that we've had on for many years. And leading off, we've got a guy who's been importing and selling and distributing beer for many years in New York City.
Yep.
Lars, please introduce yourself.
Hey, Jimmy. Hey, everybody. Yeah, it's Lars Dahlhaus with Baldur Specialty Foods. Super happy to start a whole new beer distribution with those guys.
Now, and you're one of the backbones of beer sales in New York. I mean, you work with St. Killian's. You've worked with tell us some of the brands that you've represented over the years.
You know, I'm pretty proud about bringing some great German beers over, like Rothaus and Andex, and still having a good connection to those people there. It's great seeing those on the shelves of New York City, being instrumental in bringing those over. So that's really special to me. And now doing the same thing for Baldur with bringing some beers to New York City that have never been here before. And that's what I'm really excited about, and I want to spread more of that.
We've got quite a few guests, so everyone just briefly introduce yourselves, and we're going to get to the backstory.
Yeah. Hey, Jimmy. It's Rich from Bridge and Tunnel Brewery.
Rich, great to have you back on.
Thanks, man.
Bridge and Tunnel out in Ridgewood, Queens.
Hey, it's Jahil Maplestone from Descendant Cider here in New York City.
Great to have you back, too, Jahil.
Thanks, mate.
I'm Pearson from Brown's Brewing Company out of Troy in North Hoosick, New York.
And you have a message for us. What day is today? I mean, it's a kind of a Saturday.
Yeah, it's good to commemorate given the culture of, you know, what we do making beer and being here in this restaurant and, you know, food. It's Anthony Bourdain's birthday, so cheers to setting the tone for us all.
Rest in peace to that
cheers.
Guy.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And
hi, everyone. I'm Abby, also from Brown's Brewing Company.
Kelly Brown from Brown's Brewing Company. We're a threesome today.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this is just kind of a tribute to Lars and his status in the industry. That so you're putting together the first beer portfolio for Baldur Foods, yeah. And you've got a local brewer from Queens, Bridge
yep.
and Tunnel. You've got a New York City based cider maker, Descendant, mm-hmm. and you've got an upstate from Troy, New York. Mm-hmm. Brown Brothers. So, I know the backstory of Baldur. Let's tell us. It's Balducci's great, New York grocer family started
right.
a distribution company. They're a great food distributor. They've embraced a lot of things, Hudson Valley cheeses mm-hmm. and everything. Why moving into beer, and what's the point of having beer?
I think for Baldur, the biggest thing is making sure that we cover as much as we can for our high-end restaurant customers. They are expecting the best in specialty foods from us, and we thought about what else can we bring them. And beer was such a logical extension of that for TJ and Mike and all the folks involved at Baldur. And when we looked at this, we're like, hey, we need to offer a portfolio that speaks to all the different genres, all the different restaurant types. So we will have a range of locals, a range of regional beers, different flavors, all beer styles represented. We're going to have some imported beers as well. And then, it really came down to the fact that we've got the logistics down. We've got almost 500 trucks, all refrigerated liftgate trucks, running around from Portland, Maine to Norfolk, Virginia. We've got a refrigerated warehouse. These are things that
I'm down in Cape May, yeah. New Jersey on vacation with my family, and I see Baldur delivering.
Right.
So
we've got that piece down that a lot of the smaller beer distributors will struggle with for the rest of their lives. And we deliver 6 days a week. People can order until 11 o'clock at night. We're a dream come true for a lot of the restaurant beverage managers and bar owners.
It's really, it's an important part. It's the nuts and bolts of this whole beer industry. So let's go back. So Kelly Brown, it's so great to meet you. So Brown Brewing, I want to call it Brown Brothers. But
you do. You're stuck on that. But there's been no brothers that we know of. It's been my husband, Gary, and myself. We opened our Troy location in 1993. So we're 26 years strong. So happy to finally have this moment in New York City with Baldur. It you just know, feels
it's
absolutely
good to have the
right.
Backstory, because you guys are such an important part of the New York craft beer scene. So what were you, the first brew pub since when you opened?
Yeah, since Prohibition, believe it or not, the first brew pub in New York State. And, you know, people just didn't get it. It actually wasn't a thing. Breweries, craft beer was happening on the West Coast, and we wanted to offer people some of what we experienced there out in California. And my husband was a home brewer at the time, and we made a lot of closet beer. And some of it was good, some of it was bad, but we kept at it, and we've got an incredible product. Some really talented people on our team. We have 5 full-time brewers that are committed to their craft.
Yeah, but up there, I mean, I've been there in Troy, New York, the original location. So you've got like it's a restaurant, brew pub, and there's a nice deck you can look at the river.
The Mighty Hudson.
That
really drew us to the space. We loved it. We were fortunate enough to get a building that needed a lot of TLC for a cheap price. It's really the only thing we could afford in 1990. And it took us 3 years. We did the renovations ourselves. So we were...
But it was different then, right? I mean, were you making craft beer then, or you were just making beer?
My husband was a home brewer. And we, you know, we felt that we wanted to open a brewery before a restaurant. But people said, oh, you're nuts. You need food. People just won't understand what a brewery is all about without the pub part. So I think those people were smart. We opened up a restaurant along with it and had our debut. And for a while, we were the only game in town. And now, Pearson, how many hundreds of breweries in New York State?
Yeah, I think we're crossing the line close to 400, you know, great fellow producers. And it's amazing. You know, Brown's kind of set the tone. And now joined by some really, really excellent stuff. Not just New York State, but across the nation. I mean, how many? There were 400 breweries when you opened across the country, and now we're crossing the line of 7,000.
To give more credit to Brown, I was up at the Governor's Beer, Wine, Cider, Spirit Summit in 2014. It was the first time I was there. You guys really represented well, and you know, you guys went from opening in 1993, but by 2014, you guys did have some say in the state, right? I mean, I think you guys helped influence some of the reforms.
Yeah, we were actually the first brewery to get a farm brewer's license in the state, growing our own hops. And, you know, as we progress into that, we're hoping to do our own barley. We have a country property not far from our North Hoosick location in West Hoosick, which we have a hop field in. And now our new facility, our production brewery in North Hoosick, is allowing us, we have 40-some acres that we're hoping to experiment with more grains and more growing techniques. And
well, you guys are great, and we're going to talk a lot more with you, but just tell us about the beer, because it's exciting. So now the beer through Baldur is going to be coming to New York City. What beer is this, Pearson?
So that's the Carla IPA, Citra Mosaic hops, slight New England haze in that beer. We did not filter it. We've been making New England IPAs for a good 5 years. We love India Pale Ale, and as an English brewery by trade, with open fermentation in our North Hoosick facility, you know, we're allowed some enormous flexibility. The Troy facility is now just complete research and development, so they have a wild capture expression of beers that we bring to market, and we can. It's just an amazing test kitchen.
And so how do you guys stack up? I mean, compared to other beers in the state and the region, are you participating in? You know, I mean, like Tap New York? Or I don't really know you guys.
Well, I'm glad you asked about Tap New York, because we just won gold and silver for two wild ales that we made. Aurora took home gold, which was an incredible cranberry and raspberry wild ale. 500 milliliter corked and cage is completely sold out. And then we did Solera, which is another golden sour aged in French oak on Pinot Grigio grapes. And so that took silver. And so we've been, you know, we have that enormous leeway to just make beer that resonates with us. And if people dig it, then we look to take it 26 miles further east. And
it's great. So, Lars, how did you find Brown Brewing, and why are you bringing them to New York City?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I look for the best. So I literally ran around a bunch of beer shows as well. We met also in Albany. We met at the brewery. They came down to our office. We did a tasting, and we've got a really good panel at our office of people trying beer, and it's their beers just absolutely stood out.
Is that your lunchtime program?
It is actually our Friday afternoon program.
I think I have to come over for that
one. Please do.
So you got Brown Brewing,
yep,
from Troy, New York. Mm-hmm. And let's tell us about Richie. So Richie, I've known you since you started. I used to sell you at Jimmy's Number 43.
Yep.
I was always so proud. I had to encourage you to self-distribute. But you were self-distributing in New York City.
Yeah.
And you opened the tasting room. So you're working ragged.
Right.
At what point did you decide that you wanted to distribute with Baldor? Things going through your head, business wise.
Well, Lars contacted us, and I was always not really keen to going with a distributor or investors. You know, I'm kind of, you know, fiercely independent, as I've always been. You know, build myself, all that. You know, just like
Richie builds all his equipment from the first brewery on.
So. Yeah, we started as a nano brewery in a one-car garage in my backyard. Wow. And Jimmy came, the first time I met Jimmy, he came for an interview in the garage.
All right.
And then he's been to every step. He came to our location in Ridgewood before we even opened, like a week before, 2 weeks before we opened. Remember, I was on the show.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, every milestone I've been with Jimmy, it seems, you know. But And on that note, I didn't announce to anybody that we teamed up with Baldor, so this is kind of the first time that we're putting it out there. But so anyway, Lars, it's kind of a funny story. Lars contacted us, and I thought, well, you know, I'm tired of destroying my vehicles. I've ran two cars into the ground. I'm driving around in two pickup trucks that, like, you know, it's 7 years of hustling kegs.
And Richie comes over, and he has to make sure he goes through the back of your bar to find his empty kegs.
Right.
Because he's taking them back.
And often they disappear, and it's just the whole thing.
It's been the empty keg war.
Right. It's been 7 years of it.
There's always someone that gets blamed.
Right. So then
it's not me.
Right. And so Lars contacted me, and I said, well, yeah, let's see where this could go. And we set up a date to meet, which was supposed to be at the tap room on Valentine's Day. And I was going to, I thought, well, I'll spend an hour, because I'm always tight with time. My kids wanted to, you know, have a Valentine's Day dinner and stuff. The bartender calls in sick. Really, I know that he was with his girlfriend, whatever. So I had to cover the bar. So I'm behind the bar.
Abby and Kelly know about all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it all worked out. Lars came down. I had nowhere to go. We spent probably 3 hours, right, going slowly down all the lines. And he got a chance to meet my wife, my kids, the dog, see the tap room, get a description of, you know, meet our customers. And then he said, he goes, you know, Baldor is like, we try to keep this like kind of in the family kind of thing. And I think this is a really good match. You know, he goes, I think the next step, you should come and meet us. And that's what I did. Me and Lisa went to the location in the Bronx, and honestly, we felt like it was like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory for us. We were blown away, you know, the scale, you know, like a whole yard full of trucks just waiting to go out, you know, walking coolers that seemed like they were the size of a city block, and everybody was cool. And we said, you know, this is the right fit. This is I've avoided working with distributors in the past, because I always felt it didn't feel right. It felt right.
Let's make it. I guess we can call this day now Anthony Bourdain Day, June 25th. We're not toasting to that, but in that note. But this is also the celebration for. So Baldor is launching its beer distribution on air on Beer Sessions Radio.
Exactly.
So the questions I have are more like logistical. So Richie's got a six stills coming to you. What happens? It goes to someone picks it up and it goes to the factory. Does it get barcoded? What do you guys offer that Richie can't do on his own?
You know, some of the unique things are that we have trucks running around the city all day long, right? So we can actually afford to have a truck that finishes its route at 2 o'clock somewhere in Bushwick, or in Ridgewood rather, go by his brewery on the way back, pick up the order, and drive back to the Bronx. So he would have done that trip empty, but he's bringing back the beer. Then we inventory it and put it in our warehouse, and it's ready to go out.
So the same truck. So the truck's out, and then it's like, oh, stop at Bridge and Tunnel to pick something up to bring back.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yep.
That's pretty smart. Quickly, Pearson, the second beer you poured us, this one, what was that?
Crush Golden Lager. Yeah, so absolutely love making that beer. Probably love drinking it more. It's dry hop with Citra hops, so we make a lot of beer with Citra because that hop is just absolutely gorgeous.
Are you guys going to target? So you've been up there in Troy for a while, brew pub restaurant origins. Are you going to target certain styles of beer for New York City?
Kelly.
Oh, wow, that's a good question.
That's a great question.
I mean, we're doing so many. We have. Last year, I think over 30 different styles were produced through the tap room. So if that's not enough, certainly we're going to give New Yorkers what they want. And it's going to be good. Yeah.
How do you see it, Lars? They've got 30 different beers. Are you going to pick a few that you're going to target in New York City?
I think a lot of it will come naturally by talking to our customers, seeing what they want. It's already been fantastic getting feedback from the likes of Spite and Dival and Francis Tavern and, them talking to us and saying, hey, this is something that would fit in our portfolio and would love to carry it. We're getting feedback on, what sizes they prefer and all that stuff. So I think the Crush from Browns will do very, very well. The Cherry Rasp, which we will try later, will do great. And, Rich is always coming out with amazing things. But over the last couple of days and weeks, his Bagel IPA has been tickling people's imagination and being like, if I put that on my menu, it'll really stand out. And, I think we
got to try that. Is that Bagel IPA, Richie?
Yeah.
All right, let's taste that. Kelly?
I was just going to say, as I was listening to Lars speaking, I think I've heard it said many times that a person's favorite beer is the beer they haven't had. Mm-hmm. So I think with that being said, listening to your customer is so important.
Yeah.
But in this crazy world of craft beer, it's evolving. I mean, at times, I personally love a sour. I love something different. But then, if I'm gardening or if I'm out, Abby and I have horses. If we're riding our horses, we'll come back into the kitchen and split a crush because there's nothing like that lager. Or our new favorite is actually the sours, the melange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Say hi, Abby. Come on.
Hi.
So this is your mom. It's a family business.
Yes, yes. I'm the oldest daughter. I have two younger sisters who are also a little part of the business, I guess, as well.
What's your job right now in the business?
So kind of working out a title, I guess. I do a lot of different things, but mainly I handle the financial side of the business.
Like POS for the restaurants?
Yes, yeah.
Paying bills.
All the invoicing and bills and the payroll and all of that.
I'm terrible at that, but she's really good.
So I'm learning a lot.
So on the back end, how is this is a funny question, but for me, there's a lot of listeners in the industry. You're a brewery, and you have a distributor now, Baldor. How are you going to interact back office with them? Is it just invoices?
Well,
are there
swipes? We're in Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and we have, of course, a couple other distributors in upstate New York. So I've learned through my experiences working with them. It's a lot of back and forth. You get to know your contact with the distributor. And in my experience, it's been relatively easy. We're fortunate to be like on the other side of it, where we're doing less with the, at least for me, it, doing the accounts payable is easier than the receivables. So I'm enjoying that side.
And let's jump to Jahil. So Cider, New York City Cider, it's great to have you on, man. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, so how's everything going?
Yeah, really good. Yeah, we've got a lot of sort of exciting things happening over at Descendant. So part of it is this signing with the distributor. So we're excited.
So I know you started, tell us your backstory. I know you started in, you're making cider in your apartment, right? You were a home brewer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm originally from Australia and I worked in the wine industry back there for a bit. And I've been a home brewer for, I don't know, 30 years now or something crazy. And yeah, cider.
But you're like 29.
Yeah, and some. But, back when we moved to, me and my wife, when we moved to New York, in America, really, there was just no good dry cider. I mean, there was a few around, you know, there was Farnham Hill and Eves and all these other great cideries. But, they weren't everywhere. You couldn't just go into a bodega and get that like you could get a craft beer everywhere. So our sort of inspiration to start Descendant was just, you know, let's have a local cider company making good dry cider. And but before that, we were just making ourselves because you couldn't buy it.
So. Yeah. So all that time, you were self-distributing? Or did you have you had some distributors?
For Descendant, we've been self-distributed in New York so far, but we've done a little bit of distributing in New Jersey.
But were you yourself delivering? So you'd show up with six stills?
Yeah, it started out with me, and then we've had a lot of kind of crazy ways of getting the cider out to accounts. We've sort of had crazy graffitied van guys. Like, we're just around the corner from here in Bushwick, in Ridgewood. So,
you contract them to drive.
Yeah, we had
for
some
you.
Guys that, like, you know, that all day they'd be slinging amps and stuff for bands and setting up stuff like that, and they'd finish and come and grab kegs from us and take them to pubs and stuff. So that worked for a little while, and then we kind of grew out of that. We had some other operations sort of going on, and at the moment it's me mostly and some other people just taking stuff as we need it. But we're sort of getting to the point now where we just can't kind of manage it ourselves anymore. And
so what are you streamlining what you're going to sell through the distributor?
Yeah, we are. I think I don't know how many ciders we've made to date now. It's got to be like 20 different ones or something. But we've got a core range. There's two, our Palm and our Succession, which are our two sort of staples. They're definitely something that we want to have the distributor be able to get out to the masses. Are the ones that we struggle to move to get out. Then we've got our other sort of more vintage ciders like Dry and Wilderness, and there's a whole bunch of other ones that we're working on. But to start with, it's really just those main ciders, the ones that are on tap in a whole bunch of bars. They're in all the stores, restaurants. You know, we need to get those out to more people quickly. So.
So what are the typical accounts that are going to be ordering beer insider from you guys, Lars?
So, again, we focus on the mid to high-end on-premise crowd for the most part, and that's who we're going to make the announcements to. That's who we want to pitch the product to, and I think that's exactly what resonates with every beer on the table here, which is a great array of beers and ciders, by the way.
I love the mechanics of this business. So, like, when it's a beer order, now there's this crazy thing where people are sending out emails. Every brewery sends out an email on Sunday, and usually by Sunday night you've ordered, and if you haven't, you're missing out on all this great beer. And there's a certain day of the week that the breweries are delivering, and the same thing with distributors. But with food, it's different. I mean, it might have been a busy Thursday night, and it's 12 o'clock, and the chef, for me, forgets to order, and they're like, "Oh, we get a whole list of everything from vegetables and other things that we get from Baldor." And you're saying I can add on a case of Descendant cider and case
100%,
of Bridge and Tunnel and maybe 17 kegs of brown brewing.
Totally. So I think a lot of investment on the Baldor side.
They told me to say that.
You
have to get 17 kegs at a time from brown. Because it's going to move, you know.
Right,
Kelly? It's like.
That's right. Yes, that's right. What we want.
And, you know, and Richie, you couldn't bring 17 kegs in your car.
Right, exactly.
So. You know, you're going to have some big accounts moving things.
We've got the space for it. But I think, we've got the logistics down. Anybody that orders from Baldor Food right now can add beer and cider to their order eventually. So we have the same low minimum. It's $100, and we'll deliver food for you. As long as you add a single case of beer to that, we'll bring that to you. So it's a bit of like order... less, more often. That's what we're all about. And that's what resonates in New York City because nobody has space.
And quick, we just had what, Descendant, what, which cider did we just pour?
This is Succession. This is our the first cider we ever released. It's just our sort of standard draft style cider, the everyday sort of crusher.
It's a nice dry, man. It's always so great to see you too, man.
Yeah, you're
such a great presence, and respect what you guys are doing. And was there a third beer that you poured, Pearson?
We
have a guy that, our buddy Ethan keeps track and writes on Untappd we're tasting.
Sweet. So this hasn't hit the New York market yet, but will in a few weeks, and it's a week old in this can. You want to try it?
Let's do it. Come on.
It's called Nice to Meet Me. It's part of our hashtag series of revolving IPAs. It features the Zaca and Columbus hops.
Wow.
And we went for a balance of New England.
So hashtag Brown Brothers?
No, it's not. That'll come. This is our fifth iteration.
This would be funny if there was a brother that all of a sudden showed up and laid claim to our business.
Who else wants to drive this in them? It's fun.
Pearson is pouring that, I just have to say, these accents around this table are outrageous. We have an Australian accent. We have at least two New York accents. I think we have upstate accents.
And you got Germany.
And
there you go.
Germany, so, we're multicultural.
I'm actually technically New York / Boston, so, you know, a little bit in there.
Okay. Do we have an accent? Would you say kind of upstate? I've been told that, but you don't know.
You have a solid American, it's not a term accent. What? Who knows this speak?
Intonation.
Not me.
Yeah, sorry.
You speak American, so. Although if you get down to mid-Atlantic, they think they have their own. They think they're the truest, purest American.
In the mid-Atlantic?
Apparently.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to absolutely put my foot down.
It's radio, so we can talk all we want about accents and language. But that's Kelly. I really like you guys, and one of the joys of the show is getting to meet everyone in this kind of intimate setting. Just got this sign. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Super.
This episode was brought to you by 100 Bogart, a new building in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with meeting and event spaces available for on-demand booking. Looking for the next perfect outdoor location for your next gathering? Host your next event at 100 Bogart's impressive rooftop, just steps away from the Morgan L Stop. It's one of the largest and tallest roof spaces in Bushwick, boasting 360-degree views of Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens. 100 Bogart's rooftop is available for your next networking event, fundraiser, special performance, or photo shoot. There's approximately 5,000 square feet, ample space for up to 100 guests. For more information on hosting an event at 100 Bogart's rooftop, email info@100bogart.com or call 718-362-3539.
This is Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I've been a part of the HRN community for 10 years. After all that time, I'm constantly inspired by the incredible voices of our network. Each week, I record my show in the HRN studio because I'm excited to bring you, our listeners, the most important stories from the world of beer, food, cider, and more. All of us here at HRN make food radio because we love it. This year, HRN is celebrating its 10th anniversary, but we need your support to keep food radio going strong for the next decade. Join the HRN community today by becoming a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show some love for my show by selecting Beer Sessions in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Yep, it's heritageradionetwork.org, membership drive. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. So we're talking about upstate, New York, Boston, German accents. But Jahil,
you guys have all got accents.
That's right. You speak proper English. Are you from England or Australia?
From Australia.
You are?
Yeah, but my wife's from England, so I think we've kind of like melded a bit into some weird English-Australian.
So we just kind of blanded over these great, your great English, and we just make it into American, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, anyways, cheers to you guys. This is a nice, again, it's a great little mix of people. I love meeting, new brewers and good friends like Richie from Bridge and Tunnel. But Lars, congratulations. Great job bringing together.
Thank you.
I mean, how much work did it take you to put together? So who else? Are there any other beers and ciders that's on your Baldor portfolio right now?
You know, yes, there are. So we are aspiring to grow the portfolio. There's also some beers on the table from Paris, the La Parisienne brewery there. It's probably the most highly acclaimed Parisian brewery right now, the first craft brewery from Paris. So we're bringing that over, working with a regional importer. We'll be working with other importers, SNH, West, those guys I've been a big fan of, and we'll bring in their Western cider from England.
That's a great cider.
Licorne from France as well.
Weston, W-E-S-T-O-N. Right?
W-E-S-T-O-N. Yeah. The Cable Road cider will be part of our portfolio.
You know, I'm going to just jump in. Jahil, you probably think about this too. One thing about New York, I mean, people say, well, in Portland, they drink like 30 or 40% Portland and Oregon beers. But in New York, they don't. Well, the thing about New York City is that the imports are just across the pond. So there's so many imports. So it's interesting that you're doing imports as well.
Absolutely.
As New York State.
And of course, we'll have some German friends involved as well. And again, it's about filling the niches of our customer base, our existing food customer base. Everybody wants something unique, something interesting, something different. So we will fill those demands. And there will be some regional local brands as well that will be part of our portfolio. And I think we allure especially to people that are self-distributing today that need a good home for their beer.
And their cars are breaking down.
Richie, I have to share this story. I mean, this is... It's been a very intimate relationship between Richie and me and you know, making this all happen. It's literally like... He's passing over his baby to us. Like we're responsible for this, to get it into the market from here on. And
what are you concerned about, Rich? I mean, because you were delivering, you know, to bars like mine, but you know, you were really delivering in your car. So
right. What
are you worried about that someone else is going to be handling it? Are you worried that it's going to sit in a warehouse, that they're not going to get customer service or?
I mean, initially. I've been to distributors where I saw, you know, pallets of kegs out in a hot warehouse. You know, if you remember, when I used to drop off kegs, there was one time that you didn't have room in your cold room. And you and I had this back and forth about, well, can you just get my keg into your cold room? And you said, Rich, it's like 20 degrees out. If I have it near the door, worst case scenario, it'll be 40 degrees. So I used to be, a stickler about always keeping the kegs cold, you know, stuff like that, you know. I always had control over it. I always had complete control over every last aspect. And that, I mean, it's a little hard. It's hard for me to let go of tasks. That's why I'm still doing all the brewing. You know, that's why I do all the tasks. 90% of what goes on in the brewery, I'm still doing it.
Tell us how you made your own canning line.
Yeah,
you've made so many things. I always respect the work that you do.
Yeah, I built my own. I built everything.
How much did your canning line cost?
Under $2,000.
So what did you get? What did you buy? How did you make that canning line? Aren't they like $500,000 or something?
Well, like if
Pearson's I hope waiting. My husband's not listening because
he should hire Richie.
Yeah, I think we.
You know, he's got the Queen's accent.
Yeah,
he knows how to
perfect
do.
Fit.
He knows how to use tools.
Yeah, I actually had a brewery that asked me to, a local brewery. I won't mention the name, but they asked me to help them. They wanted to pull me in to build their brewery, and I was like, I got my hands full, you know, but Yeah, I mean, it would cost, if you were to buy what I built, it would cost at least 30 to 40 grand. You know, I built it on under $2,000. Yeah. I mean, and we do it out of necessity. You know,
it's part of what we love about your beers, man. I have to say that, big shout out to Bridge and Tunnel Brewery. Just jumping, Jahil, again, talk about the New York City as an international marketplace because you're the international guy.
Sure.
How do you feel like that there's that competition, there's complementary brands? I mean, you're Australian and English making cider in New York.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that competition. I think cider's, it's a bit of a different world than beer. The beer scene's obviously like really competitive and there's loads of breweries and stuff like that. Cider is crazy. New York, I mean, most of our competition, I would say, is New York. It's when we started, we were one of the first, I think we were maybe the second farm cidery license. There was already a few other cideries making it under a wine license or whatever else, but you know, now I think it's up to close to 100 farm cideries. So there are international brands coming in, but not too many, and they've got to crack through a really big field of New York cideries. And the fact that our apple growing sort of
so what are your goals that you couldn't do on your own? So with a distributor, is your goal to have a certain number of tap handles? Are you going to try to get, you know, more shelf space?
I think it's just, I mean, that's one thing we struggle with, is just trying to reach all the accounts. And I mean, we're a really small little company, so for us it's getting out to all those locations, keeping in contact with them all, having sort of the systems that can deal with that. And I mean, you know, Baldur's been doing that stuff forever with their food.
It's so like the revolution now is it's going to be sales. Instead of worrying about the beer buyer, you're just going to go in and start giving drinks to the chefs.
Yeah,
because they're ordering.
It is one of the biggest challenges for us to change gear from speaking to the back of the house, speaking to the chefs, changing that conversation to speak with the front of the house. And believe it or not, there's so much education going on at Baldur right now. Literally, I don't know, 20, 30 sessions already of me and other brewers coming in, talking about beer, talking about beer styles, how to sell beer, how to speak that language versus food. But it's great. I mean, we had people there that were fascinated to talk to our sales team about food and beer pairings, something that you would not ever experience if you presented to a regular beer distributor. And so we wanna use their knowledge. A lot of former chefs and a lot of people that know so much about produce and food.
Just yeah, amazing. And then I get that. And it's funny because I remember when I had my first restaurant in the 90s, wine salesman would come in and say, you know, it's actually the chefs that are drinking beer, even though at the time everyone was talking wine. So I do feel like the chefs are definitely like they're the players that influence change. But for you guys, so Kelly, so back to when Brown Brewing started in 1993.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with a can next time you say that.
You had a restaurant, so you're there in the midst of food and drink. What were some of the first beers that you guys made that made you think that you would have a successful brewery and a beer brand in addition to just having a restaurant?
Yeah, so the food part of our beginning was less than stellar because, as I mentioned, my husband was a home brewer. We had, at the time, he had two partners. One was a restaurateur, but we really were lacking in that area. But I think what helped build our business and bring people back was the commitment to the high quality of the beer that we brewed. I mean, we get, depending on the style of beer, malts from all over the world, if it's right for the beer. A lot of our malt does come from the western part of the country, where, you know, the conditions are great weather-wise for the hops and the barley and all of that. But I think we've always had a commitment to natural ingredients, no additives. So when you're looking at one of our first big beers, our Cherry Raz that's here today, it started out as Cherry Raspberry, but people, it's a cult favorite, so they shortened it. Cherry Raz, give me a Cherry Raz.
Let's taste that.
So so that's a wonderful beer, and that's a beer that we knew that had to continue because we have so many fans of that beer. Cheers.
You know, I was in 2014, I was in Troy at your original location, this beautiful deck overlooking the Hudson, Kelly. And then just 2 years ago, 2017, I was at your new location in what's it called? Hoosick?
North Hoosick.
North Hoosick. Beautiful hamlet. Location. You're right on the right water, right?
Northern Rensselaer County. We're right on the border between New York and southern Vermont.
And what do you guys sell in that tap room? Like, there's a whole range, right? Yeah. There's, like, from lagers and up.
Yeah, so all of our R&D beers come out of Troy and make an appearance in the tap room, as well as it's home to our production brewery. So everything you see in the can is produced right there. We have five open fermentation tanks, which is very unique, very European of doing things. And we... my husband, when we were in Germany, was really inspired by some of that technology and that he saw there, which was really kind of old school compared to what people are doing. But he felt that it was the right thing to do
It's a spectacular place. We're on another river there. We're on the Willumsack River. You can actually, if you stumble out with too many beers, I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble by saying this on the air, but you may fall into the river.
But you're also, you're right at the border of like Massachusetts, Vermont, and New York. Yeah. It's a special place. Yep. And Pearson, you started working there about 5 years ago. Tell us something. What about Brown Brewing like made you want to work there? What inspires you?
I mean, I think Kelly just pointed it out, right? It's a true, authentic fan of the best moment of your day, which is cracking that can of beer, right?
Well, Lars, we're in New York City, so, I mean, why did you pick these guys? Because I like their beers. There's so many breweries. There's 440, I think, breweries in the state now. Why'd you get Brown?
The opportunity, the great people involved, the great beer involved, you know, it checked so many boxes that, you know, and then I was able to convince them to trust us and to make this happen. So a lot of things.
Absolutely. I want to interject on what Lars said, because this is my first time meeting Lars, but I've heard from both Abby and Pearson and my husband, Gary, who have been down here and had the chance to meet him and his team and tour the facility, that like what great people they are. And these are great people that are telling me that they're great people. I mean, usually, well, I shouldn't say usually, but it's the bar is high, and I think it's going to be a great partnership. I'm really excited.
I brought up my family, my two kids, my wife, and the dog,
on a trip to
Albany and the brewery. And we were allowed to bring in the dog. I shouldn't say this, but we brought in the dog into the restaurant, and he was behaving well for a change. And
Pearson, you're an interesting guy. So you're on a radio show in Vermont, you get to talk about beer,
beer and rock and roll. It makes sense for our brewery. You know, one of the first times I learned about Brown's in 1996 when I was there, because it was on the river and I was working on a boat. But there's a event space next to 417 River Street, Troy, New York. It's called Revolution Hall. And I had gone there for concerts. And, you know, that place went dormant for a while and is now an incredible event space and a sought-after wedding venue. We have an amazing coordinator, Kerry Harkin, that manages that, and an awesome staff there, Nigel Peters is the head chef, and so it's a really spectacular facility. So it worked out for me. You know, I by accident happened to land at a brewery, and I met the head brewer, David Wright, and he's like, "Well, Brown's is opening a tap room," and I was there in a different capacity, and then I met everybody, and it just kind of made sense. I was going to stay in the town of North Hoosick for 2 weeks, and now it's been 5 years.
That's great.
We're really lucky to have Pearson. I have to say that I don't think if our beer was less quality, we wouldn't have been able to keep this man, because he has toured some of the finest breweries in the whole country. He and his wife, and you know, I've heard so many stories, and I really feel that we have something special. We're
you guys,
very lucky.
Welcome
to
New York, and I think what's going to happen is
absolutely excited.
Now that you're in New York City, a lot of people will, because people go up there. I mean, we go upstate, we go to different parts of the state, and I'm gonna go to North.
The Willumsack Brewery,
Fall.
Yeah.
Say it. Tell me again.
North Hoosick.
North
Hoosick.
Come
hang out.
The Brown's
Brewing
spot, which is a beautiful place, a historic building, right on the water there. It's a really great place, and it's a great part of the town. Lars,
Jimmy, I just wanted to mention we just cracked the strobe light Gose from Bronx Brewery, and that was really one of that was what got Baldo started with beer. Was working with Bronx Brewery, which we're helping to sub distribute. And supplying produce to them. So this has Baldor's strawberries and rhubarb in it. And one of my first tasks at Baldor was, hey, call up Damien at Bronx Brewery and make a beer with him. So I was like, hey, love to do a sour.
So it's like the slightly ugly fruit or like potential food waste.
We have, exactly. We went down to the warehouse and looked at what fruit was in season and fruit that, you know, was perfect to make a puree out of and use for a beer. So big shout out to Bronx Brewery to making this beer with us. It has Himalayan salt in it to make it the right saltiness for a Gose. And I think it came out terrific. So it's called the B-Trek series, which Baldo will be featuring exclusively in cans. So very happy about that. And that was Baldo's start into the beer world. And everything else is...
And since you guys are, you know, I know you as a food distributor, I can see things like cans, especially, you know, the can revolution. I can see that something that it'd be very easy as a chef. All right, we're going to get our can lineup through Baldor. You've got Brown, you've got Bridge and Tunnel, you've got Descendant. But for you guys as producers, how do you deal with your kegs? Are you worried about that? It's a big cost center. Pearson, is this something that you guys have to talk about when you're dealing with distributors?
We spend a lot of time talking about how to manage kegs and should we go to a third party. You know, cleanliness is a big part of that. Handling is a big part of that. Damage is a big part of that. Is it a refrigerated truck? I mean, and if it's not, I don't want to load it. You know, the liquid is sacred. And if it's not well respected, then you don't take it. As I'm not sending it to you. That's how I feel. I feel that that's it.
Yep. Jahil, for you?
Yeah, I mean, we handle everything ourselves with the kegs at the moment. So, you know, cleaning them, all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm fine with giving it off to Baldo. I trust what they're capable of handling them and that the cider's going to arrive in a good way. So, we're yet to see how the demand's going to be and if I can keep up with my own fleet. And the other kind of issues I have now is how many kegs do I need and how do I keep that fleet, you know, from running out.
And Richie, does this mean you're going to scale up? So you said you just did a pallet for the distributor. What was it? Kegs, cans?
Yeah, it was a combination of kegs and cans, and it was the first. And it's funny because, you know, I still have my day job, so I was on my job.
Don't ask.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, I was on my
secret. He's a secret job.
I was working and have a couple of guys that are, you know, coming along. They're you know, sometimes mistakes happen, but I always say, you know what, they're getting around the learning curve. And I test, they built a pallet. They took like the whole day to build a pallet. Sorry, guys, you did a good job. I'm not saying it took too long. But the next day, we were down to one guy that was to push the pallet out. And so... it turned out the pallet was too big. We couldn't get it on the lift gate. So the pallet had to be broken down into a second pallet. So one of the Baldor truck drivers gave us a second pallet. We built a second pallet and both were able to get on the lift gate. And I asked my wife, I said, please just come down and make sure everything works out. Make sure it all gets on the truck safely. And I said, and send me a picture that, you know, everything worked out. So the end result was I got this picture of my wife was in the background. There was a Baldor truck driver, and this pallet was up on the lift gate. And my wife, and you could see her in the background with a big smile on her face.
It's
and
I an was amazing
gonna, I was going to post it on Instagram, and
you
then
should.
I said, let me wait, because I haven't announced it. But I was like, it was a stressful day. I was like, wow, it happened. You know,
so, Richard, what's the announcement?
Then I'm with Baldor. Then we're no longer doing it ourselves. You know that, like, you know, we're branching out.
So the question I have is, like, so much, like, you know, Brown started as a brew pub, a restaurant. You know, you were selling things at retail, pints and great food and everything. And at what point does it start making sense to use a wholesaler and to sell that way? Instead of selling, you know, your $6 or $7 or $8 pint in your own restaurant.
Yeah, I think, you know, just simply you can't do it all. You can't do it all well. So it makes perfect sense to know when you need help and when you need to grow. And I think partnering with the right people will give you access to markets that otherwise, you know, we've been flirting with New York City distribution for a long time. And, you know, we just knew that we needed to wait and make sure that it was right. Make sure that, and I think actually this is the perfect time because I've never felt prouder of our product and prouder to be
to be living in New York State and so close to this great city. One of my favorite food people in the world, I was lucky enough to eat at her restaurant, is Alice Waters, and her whole philosophy on food is keep it local. So I'm thinking, you know, with Baldor's commitment to food, why wouldn't the commitment to the liquid be the same? And here we're sitting around with local cideries and a great, I enjoyed a wonderful IPA from Rich, from his brewery. This is a celebration.
It's great. Actually, Alice Waters is one of our Heritage Radio Network 10th anniversary Hall of Famers, which you can keep tracking on our heritageradionetwork.org. Laura, is there anything else you want to wrap it up with? We got another show coming on afterwards, Jen with Tech Bites, which is a really great show.
Wow, pretty cool. No, I'm super psyched about everything that has happened today and everything that is going to come into fruition to Baldor. So I'm thankful for everybody to show up. We've had some amazing days in the market with Pearson and Abby. So can't wait to.
So you're launching it. This is official. You came to Beer Sessions Radio.
This is it.
You got Jamie, your crew here.
You're the first to
Thank
know.
You. And I Googled last night. I looked up Baldor and beer. And the only thing that came up was Bronx Brewery.
Yeah.
This project with the ugly fruit.
For sure. That was the
cheers
first
to
thing.
Damien, man. Great work up there,
yeah,
buddy.
No, he's amazing as well. And can't
and Jahil, anything else you want to say? Because like I know you're in a tough industry. You're in this niche industry called cider.
Oh, cider's really tough. Yeah. It's. I mean, that's part of what we're doing. We're just about to have our fifth anniversary, and it's been all us basically for 5 years, and. It's time for us to scale up and expand the team and spread the work out. And Baldur's the place for us to do what we feel. So we're really Great. Excited to sort of scale up. And
Richie, so last time we had you on, you went from your little license. It was a legal garage brewery, which there are in the state of New York, and you've just been distributing. Then you opened in Ridgewood your brewery tasting room. And it seemed at the time that you were selling most of your beer over the taps, right? And in your tasting room.
It's funny. I was just going to say on the conversation that what you were saying that the timing with Browns, this kind of shines a light on why it was necessary for us. I mean, we've been self-distributing for almost 7 years. We didn't have a single account on Long Island. We couldn't penetrate any accounts in Midtown. We had accounts that would wait for 2 months for a beer delivery, and all the accounts that we did have, I thank you for being so patient with us for not having being able to really push out the wholesale as well as we should have been able to. But so it just got like to the point where it's like, okay, let's just really, you know, we can't push it out, and Baldor can. And Baldor's cool, and that's where we're going.
All right, and last thing, big toast to Brown Brewing. Mm-hmm. You guys, I've heard about you for a long time. My good friend Mike Yezzi, who's Flying Pigs Farm up in Shoshone, New York, Washington County. Yeah. We do an event every year called Pig Island in September, pigisland.com. And every year for the last few years, he says, man, you guys got to get Brown Brewing down. And I said, you know what? Maybe this year. We'll see.
But
thanks so much. If you guys, everybody, please just one more time, say your full name, and we're going to sign off.
Kelly Brown.
Abby Brown, thank you for having us.
Pearson Constantino.
Great radio voice.
Yeah,
love that
Jimmy
guy.
Jahil from Descendant.
Jahil, a funny accent.
Rich Castagna, Bridge and Tunnel Brewery.
Normal accent.
And Lars with Baldo's Specialty Foods.
Of course, Europeans, the classy. So I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining us on the Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer Matt Patterson, assistant producer Aaliyah Paps. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member.
Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.